Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session. Today is April 9th, 2024. The time is 5:30. Could we have roll call, please, Jamie?
Yes, Mr. Hutt.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Van Wachinova.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. Could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we got discussionary items. I will turn it over to you, Superintendent Shaw.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. If you take and go into your three-ring binder, underneath that gray section, and just open it up, you're going to want to pull this document out. Because it's stapled, so it's just easier. You pull it right out, and that way it's easier to flip through. And so back in March, we finished our second trimester of iReady testing. And so we shared that we would be back in to go over that testing with you. And Andrea is going to take the lead on this. And what we want to show you, though, is we brought out the beginning of the year. So when we took our assessment there in September, and then you'll see how what has happened across the grade levels as the year has progressed. So Andrea, you want to go ahead and?
Sure. Do you want this up on the screens too, or?
Everybody has it right in front of them.
As Andy just said, we're going to walk through our trimester two data for iReady. We'll start with reading, and we do have for you the data from the beginning of the year in each of the three tiers. Just as a reminder, that tier one, that green, is our students who are scoring at grade level. The tier two students, the yellow, are those who are approaching grade level, perhaps one level below. And then our tier three are our students who are considered below grade level. And those are the students who would be more than one below. So you have your meeting, approaching, and then you have your tier three that are below. So
are these all the students?
This is every student.
Thank you.
Yep. So we're going to go through it. It's separated by grade level, but it is all students in the district. So we start with our kindergarten, and you can see underneath the chart is at the top for you that has each of the grade levels, and if you follow it across, starting with kindergarten, you'll see at the beginning of the year we had 26% of the students, and we say beginning, we mean September. So they came to us right away. They take this diagnostic within the first week or two of school, and then we see who's already scoring within a kindergarten level, and then who's kind of in kindergarten. You don't have a tier three. There is no more than one below in kindergarten, so you'll only see green and yellow for them. So at the beginning of the year with the kindergartners who came to us, we had 26% that scored already within that beginning of the year kindergarten view, and then we had 74% that were in the tier two. As we moved down to trimester one, that was the assessment the kids took at the end of November, beginning of December-ish. They moved to 43% scoring in that tier one, where they should be in 57% in the tier two. Their most recent diagnostic, in tier one, we had 66% of our kindergartners scoring where they needed to be right now, with 34% in the tier two we're approaching.
I'm sorry. Tier one represents what?
At grade level.
So that's
meeting expectations.
Is that the effective, not like, are you using that scale on this? Or?
We don't really use it effective for the kids, so it's either meeting, approaching, or the below. So
okay.
Green would be meeting your expectations.
Okay, and then yellow is?
Approaching.
Approaching.
And red would be below.
Red would be below.
Yes.
Andrea, about the kindergartens, do we know how many went to Young Fives and other?
I couldn't give you that number right off the top of my head, no. And with that kindergarten, you do have, and we could do some digging into that data, but I don't know it off the top of my head to give it to you. So if you follow down, you'll see the same thing. We saw another nice gain in our first grade. And the charts below, again, just show you. We've been using those pie charts for you so you can kind of see the way that wheel is shifting between where the green is growing. In the kindergarten case, the yellow is shrinking. Our first grade students have made some great progress this year. At the beginning of the year coming to us, we had 13% that were scoring in that green or on level tier one. As we've moved through At the end of Tri One, we saw 25% there, and at the end of Tri Two, we saw 45% there. We also saw, you know, as that grows, so does our students who are, the students who are below are shrinking. So as you look across this, you're going to see that commonality that that tier three number across all of our grade levels has gone down. There's been a decrease in tier three. And in even the places where perhaps we saw the tier two not show as much increase, that was where the tier one increased. So we are seeing that kids are either holding their own or they're growing, especially in that tier three. And that's where we, when we talk tier three, those are the most intense interventions that we're putting into place. So we have evidence across the board here that those interventions are working and that kids are growing as we see those numbers go down. So I'll give you a minute if you want to take a look at the reading. This is, again, across the board, K-8, of how our students have progressed from beginning, Tri 1, and Tri 2.
Andrew, a question on it. As you get into the upper grades, particularly like, well, let's say fifth grade up, there doesn't seem to be as much improvement from beginning of the year to trimester two.
Mm-hmm. What grade, Tom?
Say 5 through 8.
Okay.
There's some improvement, but it's not significant like you're seeing at the lower grades.
Mm-hmm.
Any reason? What's your explanation?
It's harder to move up. Those expectations become increasingly difficult the older the students get. The test looks a little different, the diagnostic as they're taking it, so we don't see as many. You also have more growth that a student needs to make in order to move to that next level or to get out of. So if we're in a tier three at a first grade level, for example, it takes a little less to get into a tier two and less to move to a tier one. As we get to those higher grades, it takes a larger increase to get out of those tiers.
So I know we talked about this before. So when we were looking at this group of first graders last year, our second graders this mm-hmm. year, I know we've talked a lot about how we do we kind of follow them.
We have that for you.
That's up?
That's coming right after
Thank
this.
You.
Yep. We have the same groups of students.
I'm trying to figure that out by looking at this.
Yep. So this is just this current year, and then the next part that we move to in a second will be your cohort of kids where you will see what they looked like at this time last year.
Yeah, because I see like 14% and 12% and, you know, tier one.
Yep. That's our next part of it. But I'll give you a minute to kind of look through this, and then we'll move to that cohorted part.
Yeah, because like third grade, fifth grade, the yellows are really, really big.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm just doing a visual.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, what did I say, yellow?
Yellow, red.
Well, that's with the red, if that's at the beginning of the year.
Well, this is trimester one and trimester two. There's still sections
mm-hmm.
of red.
And that's what Tom was also sharing mm-hmm. is that it takes, when we talk about, and I'm going to have Terry share some on this too, is when we talk about early intervening and how much time it takes. So a skill that you could teach to a kindergarten intervene that could take you 10 minutes in intervention is a 30, 40-minute intervention at that fifth grade or higher. And so is there anything else you want to add to those great higher grade levels?
Personally, is with those older grades, like we had a number of years where we had the impact of COVID, and not to use that as an excuse, but you know, 1920, they didn't have the last third of their school year. 2021, we were learning labs for the most part, and then 21, 22, we had a lot of quarantining that we did, so like a kiddo could have, you know, their mom have COVID, so they're out for 10 days for that, and then you know, their little sister gets COVID, and then their 10 days starts over, and then their dad gets COVID, and their 10 days starts over. So our attendance during that 21-22 school year was, you know, not what we would hope it to be
So we understand that, and I know that comes up all the time. But we got to kind of move on from that. So we were talking about historical data, I think it was yesterday in some capacity, how the historical, one of you guys brought it up, how the historical data doesn't even really support that entire view of the data because, I don't know, Tom, your chart's shown it better.
The effect of COVID is, it's there, but it's not significant. The downward trend in the skill sets started.
It wasn't like they went like this and then they went boom in historical data charts. So I'm looking for something new. Like what are we, instead of saying it's all COVID, what are, I'm sorry, Larry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's all COVID. I'm just saying that's just a wondering that I have when I think about how important kindergarten, first and second grade is. And, you know, you're right, like the scores were decreasing prior to that. But just thinking about these particular students and just a thought.
No, it's a thought that, you know, we've explored and we understand it does play a part.
But I do think, you know, with all of the moves that we've made this year with extra intervention support and all the books that we've purchased and the decodable text, all of those things, I think are helping us to show some great growth in K-1, too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Which is my question. I mean, we have tier one, tier two, and tier three. I mean, is that something Monroe made up, or is that something we compare to children throughout the state of Michigan?
No, tier one, tier two, tier three is not something we made up. That's how it's defined, and that's how it's defined in the iReady system as well as tier one, tier two, tier three.
If we looked at Ida or Dundee, we should see the same thing, correct?
Well, it depends.
Like in fourth, five,
if they
six.
If they use that.
Tom Carroll's question.
Yeah, which we wouldn't have access to their iReady scores in a district.
So if they were to generate a report in iReady and it was Ida or Ford or Bedford, it would be the same way that the data is laid out. It would be the same categories, all of that. We didn't make any of that. We just generate the report. But obviously, you know, their data would probably look different.
And I think earlier, I guess like last year, we indicated that iReady and MSTEP, there's almost a one-to-one correlation, right?
It was a strong.
Not one-to-one, but it was strong.
Right, but pretty close.
It was a 0.8.
Well, I know Scott this week, but.
Okay. So if you look back at that, the very first page on there, though, you want to think about, okay, growth. Are the students growing? You know, Tom, you brought up about, like, for example, fifth grade. At the beginning of the year, our fifth graders started out at a 12% tier one, 22, 20, and 67% in that tier three. And we go to the two-thirds of the year, at the March right there, those same students are now, instead of 12% at tier one, it's 25. 22 was at tier two to 34. We went from a 67% tier three to 41. So you're still getting, we're still having growth. And when it comes to how much, it's that's the variable on each student, how much they're going to have. We're remediating. We're intervening, and but to go from a 67% at that tier three to 41, good things are happening in your classrooms there, and I think when we're going to really look at it, and you look at third back in that September column there, third grade all the way up through eighth grade had greater than 50% of the students in tier three, and now if you go over to the end of March, we have one grade level above 50% of our students in tier three. So it's, and all I'm doing is just looking at those top charts right there on that very first page.
I'm always doing the translation in my head as to growth rate, and this was an eighth grade iReady and stuff math, how you had to factor growth rate. So I've recently done factorizations of growth rates. So what the correlations of those two are. But in this category, I'm constantly translating that growth rate into these third graders have met the third grade level and I know the reading level isn't that, but, you know, the third grade level. So they're going into fourth grade, you know, and they're not in sixth grade reading at a third grade level. Because iReady, we talked about iReady. iReady is a growth. It's like set up to factor the growth rate. But it doesn't always, I'm always looking at the translation. Does that make sense? What is that translation into all these kids are graduating third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and doing that level work? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm always feel like I'm doing that.
And I think if I'm not mistaken, I mean, as you go from beginning of the year, trimester one, trimester two, I mean, it's the measurement is moving. In other words, when you test them in the beginning of the year, it's a bit
right, where they need to be
tier three, right?
Shifts a bit depending on the time of the year.
So we can, that actually has a factor of growth in there.
It does, and I think it also supports the fact that kids are growing, because in order to score at that tier one level, they have to perform at a higher level than they had to back in September. So as we see those increases, like, we're not only seeing kids kind of either hold their own, but we're also seeing kids growing.
I still want to see the grades. Like, I just want to see, like, yes, they can read third grade level. They can read at a fourth grade level, their comprehension level, their math skills. Like, I know I'm old school, I get it, but it's a very difficult mindset to shift into a growth rate, and I'm working on it. And thank you for your data, because it definitely helps, and it is encouraging to see those colors shifting and the colors changing. And but you know, it's hard not to see the students involved too, you know. But so your work is great.
Thanks.
Don't get me wrong.
Bring a little more clarity to that, Darla, because I think when we're go back to what tier one is just what you described.
That's tier one.
Yes, I'm aware of that, but okay. I'm also aware of the percentages that fall into tier one that would be coming out of tier three, and there's still 60% of the kids that are still in the red. And so I think about that 60%, that's 6 out of 10 kids or 5 out of 10 kids, however you want to, you know, move that number a little bit. So that is still at that, there's five out of 10. And so not that it isn't improving, and it is great. I mean, kids are learning. That's what we want, is we want kids to learn. But we also have to identify where we're still at.
Sure.
And that's why we were sharing. If you go to, and you're looking at that trimester two, we have one grade level, and that is seventh grade with 52% in the tier three. All the rest are well below that percentage there. And so we're really, what's becoming impressive is the stockpiling of kids at tier two and getting them to move on. So when we come back here and show the end of the year, that so you have that fourth column, mm-hmm. you'll be able to look at the kids for the full year and what they did. I'm right here.
You're
so
in the front?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So what you want to look at is this last column on your right there, right here, that is right here, March.
Tier two.
So, for example, no, tier one.
He's talking trimester two.
Yes, this column.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Yes.
And so, for example, that fifth grade, as an example, at the beginning of the year had 67% of their kids in tier three, and now 41% are sitting in tier three.
Oh, I am not discounting that whatsoever.
Right.
That is a growth rate in that cohort, for sure. Mm-hmm. But when I do my translation, that's still 40% that are not anywhere near able to advance into the next grade at this late of the school year. They'll be going in that far behind. Because iReady, if you're doing addition and subtraction in iReady, but you're sitting in a class that's doing early geometry, your grades in geometry might be failing, but your scores in iReady may be increasing because you learned your multiplication tables, you learned how to divide, which is all really good stuff. Don't let me discount any of that. But that is the reality of the way the system functions.
So your example of you could be in a geometry class and have an iReady lesson that might be teaching you some of that addition subtraction skills. You could also have some lessons that a teacher's assigned to you. Also, a huge component of iReady is that it is not just a tool that we say, put kids on it for 30 minutes, put kids on it, and just let them go. The teaching that comes along with that is important. And within iReady, a teacher can get in, can run a report of a student and say, here's the grade level. So if they're in third grade, I can pull up the third grade level standards, and it will tell me where that student falls along those standards,
right,
and what third grade pieces and interventions I can put in place. So while the personal diagnostic path might take them down a road to give them the foundational skills they need,
which is what they do at home.
Which is what they do at home. But the larger component of iReady would be that I can look at my grade level standards, and as a teacher or an interventionist, instruct at that grade level expectation with the interventions and the scaffolds and the supports that a student needs.
Oh, I understand the concept for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I think another thing to just to point out within that, you know, when we look at that tier three, we always look like, is it decreasing? Would we like to see it decrease even more? Absolutely, we would. And part of that is that shift of students. We would love to take them straight from that tier three to tier one, and that happens sometimes. But a lot of times it goes from a tier three to a tier two to a tier one. And so we have that gradual, and so we're always looking across the board, and this is where our buildings and our teachers dive in to say, okay, who are those individual kids? Name them, put a name to this number, look at the score, look across the domains, and then design a plan that helps to move that child to the next tier.
Right. And that's where we're getting for you now, that cohort. So if we turn back to the page where you see it right here.
Yep. So that's our next
that's
cohort.
That's a great segue right into the cohorting. That is from last year, March, to this year, March.
This is last year, March. So we'll start with reading again, since we were with reading. This is the cohort data. So you have to skip ahead a few pages
sure
past those pie charts.
Yeah, we need to start putting pages up.
That's all right.
Oh, gotcha.
You'll have a chart that shows you that tier two reading cohort data. And we start with first grade. It is really difficult to cohort our kindergarten group just because you don't have the separation of three domains within kindergarten. You start to get that at first grade.
We are a little challenged right
now.
It's about four pages back.
We started out in math, and then we just...
There it is.
Your hands on it.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. It's on page 10.
I do admit my challenges.
Going.
I do.
I got a number page.
One.
Oh, it's all the hands.
You shouldn't have to do
that. I got
that
a number. Andrew. I got a number.
Five. Five pages in.
We got it. Thank you.
All right. So this is our reading cohort data. So you have your, you'll see the where they were at trimester two of 2023. These are the same students. So it's all students in the district, the same, whoever was enrolled last year. It would be the same students to the second grade group this year. So we have that same group of students following them through from trimester two of 2023 to trimester two of 2024. So again, starting with that first grade, just because it's difficult to cohort those kindergarten kids when you don't have the separation of the three domains or
so
three
levels.
So you
can kind of go across the parallel
you can,
line.
Yep, you can go right across. So that first graders in 2023 yep. are your second graders right now. So you'll see those percentages, and you can follow down to kind of see how those groups of kids are performing, where they were at last year at this time, where they're at this year at this time. And, you know, just a couple of highlights as you look. You will again notice that tier three decreasing, and in many cases that tier two was increasing.
So in factoring growth rate, one of the factors you look at is you look at over time. So you say, what does this look like over time? And there's actually a formula you use. Yeah, I'm sorry, I just learned this recently. But there's a formula you use and how it calculates over time. And how long do you think it's going to take for you to meet the goal that we've set out? Where would that be, in the strategic plan or somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And based on its current growth rate, has anybody looked at when do you believe we'll get to where we need to be? Am I saying it right? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
And I know you said there's no exact correlation, but can we kind of pick up that tier one is meet or exceeding, or is that?
Tier one would be meeting or exceeding, yes.
And yellow would be
approaching.
So that might answer mm-hmm. part of your question.
Yeah.
Okay.
But how long do you think it's going to take to get there, Larry?
Right. Okay.
My question is, how long is it going to take at this rate to get there?
Well, they'll never get there. If this is
Well, we got to also go back to when you say get there. What's the number of getting there?
Well, that's true.
Isn't that, that's why I said that would be something that would be in the strategic plan, because I believe in our current one that we're operating off of is like, what's the rate of graduation? What is the rate of all these things? I mean, it's in there. It's like 80-90%.
I think it would depend.
And if you're talking about tier one and you look at the numbers in tier one, that's, I'm just looking at that as that.
Yeah.
I mean, tier one really, I mean, it increases slightly, but it doesn't, I mean, it stays around 20%. I mean, not consistently, but I mean, it's around.
Sure. I think our biggest changes as we looked at that cohort data was taking that tier three, moving into a tier two. And so if we kind of have that mindset that when we cohorted these kids, the hope would be, and again, this is not using a formula, not doing any of those, the hope would be then as you think towards the following year, next year, like we're going to see that shift of the tier two move to the tier one.
And there's, and I think really, Darla, to help answer your question, is that we're attacking two targets at the same time. So one is addressing kindergarten, first grade, and really hitting it early with the smaller class size and interventions to the literature, and then still doing all of our interventions. Remember last year we worked and we did a better job this year of getting more staff on for hiring of interventionists, time in interventions. But it's one of those things that you can't intervene. We always talked about the hole. We were starting on a hole that was huge. You can't intervene your way out of that hole, especially as the kids get older. So we're doing everything in our power to make sure that we don't start it in a hole as far, and that's where we look at the kindergarten, first or second grade, and that red, and so that's where we look at going, okay, as the kids are coming out of kindergarten, coming out of first grade, and that's where we look at the amount of time we have put in interventions. And at tier three, we're not having to put as much because they're already in tiers one or two, so it's starting it's just an earlier approach. But at the same time, we're still working with all students to do all everything we do. And so that's when we talk about all those intervention times and how much time we have in a school day.
Right. So anytime any of us in our life puts a plan together, you know, you come up with an idea, you have multiple choices. What am I going to choose? What do I think is the best plan forward? This is the plan that's in place, and I completely get it, and I completely understand it. My personal view on that is essentially irrelevant in some capacity. But when I want this to succeed, I feel like I need to, like, I'm trying to hear, like, what is going to get this to succeed, because now we're at an end of another school year. And so I came, when did I start coming here, guys? Like years ago. And I remember sitting out there, and I remember hearing essentially a very similar conversation, different way of approaching it, but it was still the same conversation. And I sit here, what, 4 years later, and I feel like I'm still sitting out there listening and trying to understand what is the really, like what is the mover and shaker here? Does that make sense?
Or maybe put a different way, how do other systems do it differently than we do it and get different results?
More successful.
But that's why I'm saying that when we look at kindergarten, first grade, second grade, we're doing it. We're working off of where our students are at. And we talk about the ability for how much a student can learn at a given time as they get older. There's only so much they're going to take in. So we're intervening at high levels there. But to look at it, you're looking at going in that cohort, and you're seeing going from in the fifth grade, 23% of our students on tier one to 30%. And from 53 to 45 in the tier three. That's movement. And that's a lot of movement for a fifth grader.
And so, the growth rate,
but that's my point, is that
best point to that, but,
right.
But does it correlate to them being able to meet the, I can do what third graders do. I keep throwing out third grade, I don't know why, but you know, am I able to get into fourth grade? Am I reading at the right level? Because how many times have we heard that they're years behind? So I get the kindergarten and first grade. They are the very first people to be plugged into this program. I get it. And I get it. They're going to give you the most data on this particular program. But this program has to not only be addressed for the kindergarten and first grades.
Yeah.
We have, like, all the other ones. We talked about how far they were behind. We had the teacher come in here and say mm-hmm. how far they were behind.
Right.
So I'm looking for that.
And that's what we're saying, is we're getting the growth that we would expect to get. I mean, when you're seeing 5 to 7% growth as you get as in some of these grade levels, that's what you're gonna. That's what's gonna be.
Yeah, but it's not into the green.
It's not yet into the green. I think what I just want to stress right now is that it is a process to move these students into that green, depending on where they start. And each student is starting at a different point within that tier. Some students are going to be closer to the next tier than others. And so when we think about those designing those interventions, that's where digging into the data. And when we say, and I think we showed you this in the last presentation, we had our buildings, and we plan to do this again with our building teams, would be to actually break down and see within that tier what are the actual scores of that kid and who's pretty close to the next tier. But some, it is a process of movement. So anytime that we see movement, and I mean, we aren't showing you this here, but there's movement within a tier. So a student may not change tiers, but they have moved. And we're looking at that. And yes, we want the kids in green. That's the ultimate goal, but we get there. It's a process to get there. And that movement, what we're seeing with kids is that we are decreasing that tier three, which is going to eventually, going to take some time. I can't tell you how long, but it's going to take some time to get kids into that.
Well, see, there's the thing. We're an education system, and an education system should always calculate that in. You have calculate time in at some point, because I remember you saying 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is year one. And so we only have one more year to meet what was presented when the program was presented. You'll see big stuff in 2 years, and I'm looking at it going, if this is all you're moving on year one, what happens through year two? Like, what is that big thing that's going to make you jump higher? Do you get what I'm saying?
So that, but we're back to what a typical growth is, and seeing a 5 or 7% growth.
I want kids educated. Like, that's
Darla, I'm going to say to you right now that our kids are being educated. And I think, too, we got to always understand, too, that being placed into a tier doesn't mean you can or cannot read or can or cannot do that grade level. It's just an indicator. It's an indicator. But at the end of the day, our kids are learning. We're seeing the data right here. Now, if you want 10% growth, you're talking about something totally different. What's relational, and what are we really able to pull off here? And so again, when we're looking at the subgroup, what you're looking at that subgroup is the variable. It's kids. I mean, right now, today was our first day with M-stepping. Okay, and praying that our kids walked in today and rocked it out, but I don't know. I don't know if they had a great morning coming in or not. And whatever grade level was tested. And so it's all about that child that showed up. And the same goes right here for that performance. And so there is no guarantee. What I can say, though, is all of the time and effort that's been put in the last 18 months, and it was even prior, but it has been very focused, and we're seeing is that movement. And going from, you know, if you're looking on that front page, going, okay, you had high 50% to 60% in tier three to having one grade level at 52% now at the end of March in tier three. You go to the cohorting. We had three grade levels in the 50% there in tier three last year, and now you're down to one grade level in over 50, and that's at 51% in the tier three.
In the cohort? On what?
In the cohort. Yep.
Reading?
Yeah, in the reading. So you had three grade levels, and that was fifth, sixth, and seventh. They had over 50% of their students in tier three. And now we have one grade level, and that is seventh grade level.
Six is at 55% too. Am I looking at it wrong?
55 and 45.
That's the math one must be.
How did I get on math again?
I don't know. It's about five pages back in the front.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. I'll go.
Question for you, Andrea. The students that you're using in this data, does that include IEP and 504Bs?
Yeah. That's all students.
All students.
All students.
So
So I just wanted to say something. I'm a secondary person. I like to see all my kids in the same building. So I say like the middle school, the eighth graders, they're on the third floor. And when I see a 7% change in tier three, there's roughly 300 plus eighth graders. So each one of those percents is worth three kids. So classroom has 21 to 24 kids. I see an entire classroom on that eighth grade floor move a whole color. Not just a partial color, like from the middle of red to kind of the cusp of yellow, but there's, you know, if you look at 5 to 6 or 7% reduction in tier three, that's 21 kids. Might be 24 kids, depending on how many kids are in that grade. There's 24 kids that have jumped from a grade level below to partial, almost proficient.
Out of how many kids?
Well, there's 300, so each percent is roughly three kids. So when I look at those reductions in tier three, like that's where the magic is happening, where that huge shift that where we're starting, I mean, each percent is three kids. So that's 21 kids that were at least a grade level below are almost there in two-thirds of a school year.
Out of 300 kids.
How can we?
20 kids is a 23, 24 kids, like that's a lot of kids because I see those.
But I can't help calculate what is the growth factor rate that gets us to where we get at least half of them. And so if it stays at the same growth rate, just doing the simple math like that, that's like 4 years to even get anywhere close to, and anybody that's better at math can come up with that, until we even get a third. And so to get half, you'd have to add another 2 years. And in order to get another half, you'd have to, so there's a simple calculation of based on those numbers, that's like what? Who did the math? A lot of years.
Why?
Just based on that.
Yeah, that's 4 years.
It looks like we have more success in getting from tier three to tier two than tier two to tier one. Now, I understand there's different levels of what they have to achieve, et cetera, but if they're at a lower level, they're basically achieving more than, I don't want to say more than the grade, but I mean, they're achieving more than from level two to level one. See what I'm saying? What is, I mean, do we just put that much more resources in tier three?
We have a lot of tier three interventions. Those students are often involved in extended day, during the day. Certain programs are designed for tier three. Those are more intense. They're smaller group interventions, either one-to-one, one-to-three, versus a tier two may not be receiving as intensive interventions as tier three.
Is there any way we could do the same thing for tier two? Because again, ultimately, I guess we want to get to tier one. Can we afford to put those resources in tier two people as well? Or
We need our staffing numbers, right?
I would imagine it's like.
Well, we had tier three monies. We had all kinds of monies. I mean, it's not that we didn't have the money. I'm just asking.
I don't even know how many we have, so I can't tell you. We need more.
How many
interventionists or what do we
need? I'm gonna imagine it's like charging a battery. The first half charging it charges pretty quick, but then as you start coming up, the work starts getting harder and it's getting a little bit further. But I guess maybe we need to look at
we
didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of here overnight.
I mean, that's true, Larry. I mean, I understand about the battery,
yep.
But the batteries have a 100% capacity.
Yep.
Okay, you're right. You can put more amps in it. You're right.
Yep, as it comes up, it starts slowing down.
But if they started at a lower capacity to
I'm
begin with, okay,
yeah.
You know, they
that's
have,
where you're seeing coming from the yellow or from the red to the yellow.
But the growth rate is greater for
yep.
these guys. Why is it that the growth rate is greater?
I think they started further behind.
Well, I mean, I understand that, but I mean, I'm assuming the people that start further behind have a lesser capacity to comprehend the work.
Could be.
Well, the people in level two, I'm assuming, have a greater capacity somewhat understanding what's going on.
Well, you got the low-hanging fruit that you're picking in red. As you get into the yellow, it starts getting a little bit harder,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah, but I mean, if they go from red to green, for example, two levels, I mean, that's quite a growth rate. Why can't
huge.
We achieve a growth rate like that in tier two for the probably, I don't want to say smarter kids, but I mean, you know, the more adapted children that can learn. I, I guess I don't understand that part.
Part of what Andrea was saying is there's more resources applied to the tier three people.
That's what I got to find out. How do we do that? Because again, we.
And that's not to say tier two. Tier two, there's, we do a lot for our tier two students as well. It just might look a little different. But, you know, at, like, to your point though, we have put a lot in tier three. We're seeing those numbers shrink, which then allows us to put more into tier two. So as we move to tier two, we see hopefully then the results of tier two shrinking and tier one growing.
More staff, more money.
Well, okay, I mean, is that what we need? I mean, do we need more staff, more money?
I don't know.
Well, can I?
We need that answer, I mean, you know, because again, if that's what it takes, that's what we're here for. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is.
So I would like to just put an idea out there that even the best school systems in our state, the best school systems in our country, do not have 100% of students in tier one. So I feel that this concept of, well, when are we going to get everybody to tier one? When is everybody going to get to tier one? I feel like that's an unrealistic goal. I feel that realistic goals focus on the students that we have and recognizing that there are so many other variables impacting their learning. And also to consider the fact that learning is not a linear straight line. There's going to be growth, there's going to be plateaus, there's going to be setbacks. So a lot of these students, we might want to assume that it's this particular student that's bumping from red to yellow to green to change those numbers, but it's not necessarily student A. This could be student A moved from red to yellow, but student B moved from yellow to green or what have you. So I feel that we need to find a balance of looking with a really fine-tooth comb, which thank you, we are, with the data that's in front of us that represents our current students. Then we need to stop focusing on, well, when is everybody going to be able to be in green? When is everybody going to be able? That's not ever going to happen. However, we do need to start setting very, like, distinct goals on what we want to see, and that's a part of the strategic planning process, and that's also understanding, like, this is also wrapped into the programs that we're approving as a board. This is also, like, when we do hire those additional support staff and when we hired our new academic tutors and all of those positions, making sure that those positions are filled and available to our students are also really important.
I mean, I'm not being unrealistic. I don't expect we're going to have 100% green. The only thing I want is to meet whatever Ida,
no, we said
Dundee, and Airport has.
What do they have?
Same area.
But
66%.
So, in the green?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm satisfied with 66%.
That's the bottom line. I mean, I agree. We'll never get to 100%. But, you know, the best schools in the state are multiples ahead of this.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, even the best schools in this county are well above 24%, you know, capable from grade three. And we're, let's be realistic, we're at the bottom of the list in the county and the bottom of the list in the state. So we have a long way to go.
And what I need from Andrew is, what do we need? I mean, Andrew, if you say, I need more tutors, we have to work on that. That's our job, that we have to get more people in the classroom. We have to do whatever not it takes.
But I would. But the other thing. But the other thing is, though, the plan is working. We've been implementing, and it's working. You've got to remember, we're really coaching up our teachers, and they're doing a phenomenal job. Our kids and their attendance rates, our discipline rates, everything is working, and it's just going to take time. And again, I talk about how much a younger child can take in, and how fast they learn, to what it takes for an older student to learn here too. And what I say about that is about if there's a skill deficiency. So we've got the movement, it's working. And again, when it comes down to is that, and Andrea and I talked about this today, is, you know, when MSTEP results come out, we're really seeing that right now, hopefully those tier one we're looking at, that's where we're gonna live. We don't know. What we do know is that partially proficient, that's what's climbing into that pot. So now we have that opportunity to get them in the eyes of the state into a what they would consider to be highly proficient or proficient. But I still want to say, it doesn't mean that our kids can't read, our kids aren't learning, our kids aren't doing what they can do in the classrooms.
I guess maybe one way of looking at it, maybe pessimistic, but it's kind of like we're not failing as bad. Because we're going from tier three to tier two.
We're growing.
But tier two, it means still not meet or exceed.
Tier two means we still have work to do. And it means that we have a snapshot of the work that we need to do.
Right, and that's what we've got to find out. What is that work that we need to do? And what does it take from us to let you do that?
Because we have one more year. Because we were expecting, I was expecting, based on when this presented to me, that within 2 years, we would, this program would be able to show the kind of results we were looking for. And so I get it. Maybe we are, some of us are thinking, or me, I will include myself only, maybe unrealistic in my goals and expectations of what I think that we can do. And so I can acknowledge that, I can appreciate that, and I can understand that, you know, but I do have expectations based on my understanding of how this program would work with big results in 2 years. So I'm with Larry, and I keep saying, what is that thing? What is that thing? Maybe it's like, what is that thing that we can do? What is that thing that's needed? Because we're 1 year in.
And
what do you want, Terry?
Yeah.
I wish I had the magic answer.
I don't have a magic answer. But I... It is, and I think a lot of what the investment in the people.
I understand the hard part. What does that mean? I mean, translate that to ordinary English for us. What does that mean? The board has to do.
There's nothing more. Patience. Go back. No, you need to go back to your first page. Okay. We want to talk about that tier three. The tier on your front page.
I understand tier one. We're not feeling as bad as we did before.
No. What I'm talking about though is you talk about okay. If you're looking even at this year, where the kids started and where they're at today, even in the tier one.
And
you begin at that second grade, went from 14% to 31, 25 to 41, fourth grade, 15 to 24. And that's in the tier one. So the kids are growing, they are moving. Will that, now the question becomes, and this is, you know, where it really sits, is will that translate to these next 3 weeks to the kids performing on the on M-STEP? I don't know. All I can say is when you're looking at this right here, and this is taking and using a state-approved online assessment tool that is very similar to that of the of M-STEP. So we're using, so there's no, I'm not sitting next to Larry and doing a Dibbles test. I'm not doing, it is him in front of the computer. It's an old format of being able to score. Okay. Sorry. Didn't mean to do that. But what you have, though, is it's all about Larry sitting in front of the computer and performing. I know. We went old school on some stuff here. And so on iReady, did he perform at that grade level? And so when we're looking at it, you know, I'm thrilled to look at trimester two. We're looking at two grade levels that are still, that are in the 20s, and that's in the moderate 20s right there. Now let's see what happens come the end of the year. Where do these students move to there? And then we look at that shift. So when we, it's one thing to look at the cohort where they sat last year, but then if we're looking at, okay, what are they doing currently this year? And again, so it's a matter of, all the work is happening with the teachers, with the training, all the work is happening in the classrooms. Thank you. Lots of people have been hired in the intervention world. And so, and if we didn't have that stuff, that's when we're not going to see the kinds of changes that we're seeing. So now it's just, it's stay on it. Because I think the other thing is it takes time. Remember back to, for teachers, how long it takes for a teacher to really get accustomed to the work. And that's a 2 or 3 year time period. And that's if you're brand new. So.
But is there anything that's needed to boss us?
If we had an ask, we would have been coming to you saying, we need this. And that's where we've been sitting.
Fair enough. I mean, I just need to know that we're doing whatever else it is that we can do.
Nope.
Doing everything we can.
Okay.
So I do want to get into two other items right there. So you can, if you want to go into the math on your own, you can there. The cool part about the math is this is year one with new math materials.
And keep in mind with the math, it takes, if you look at research of new math programs, it can take 3 years before you start to see the impact of the math program. But in year one, we are already seeing some changes. And I'll just say feedback around it has been extremely positive.
Yeah.
Just to highlight that this is us night. We had parents stopping by the math table talking about their experience with their student at home with the math program and enjoying seeing the things that are coming home. So we're excited for what to monitor that data over time with the new math program and continue to see those gains.
Yeah. Yep. So dive into that right there. Know that at the end of the year in June, we'll be back for another presentation so you can look at the kids in totality for that year. The next item we had right there is we want to talk about the board policy and compensation, and that's why we have Jeremy with us tonight.
I'd just like to thank you, Andrew, and everyone for making this presentation. I think this is probably one of the most important things that we do.
It is. So, it's number one.
And we do a really good job.
And we are moving, so.
Yes.
So
in your packet there, you're going to see the board policy on board member compensation. And what was talked about last month was, and we just brought back the exact same one that was Jeremy and I had worked on and wanted to have a discussion with him here. One of the other parts that came up is that the request to strike out for up to a total of not more than 52 meetings, including committee meetings, for that to be struck out. So it's just board members may elect to receive not more than $40 per meeting as compensation for their services, then all of that yellow would be new. Okay, so that's what it would read right there.
Yellow's new? Okay.
Yellow is new. So Jeremy, you want to take a second and walk the board through that crafting?
Very happy to. Hello, everybody that I haven't had a chance to greet personally yet. So the language that was in black is the default Neola language. That's what they shipped to you. That's where they came from. My understanding in reference, Mr. Van Washenova, the yellow was new compared to Neola, not new compared to the last time Andy showed it to you.
Correct.
Right?
That's what you got it, sir.
Okay. I want to make sure that we're... So the only change versus, what Andy showed you last time would be striking that limitation of the 52 meetings. The standard Neola language says shall receive not more than, which leaves the possibility of some lesser number, but it says shall receive a dollar sign. That is what was addressed in the letter a month and a half ago or so that I sent to you last time, addressing how the IRS has evolved their position on that over time. When I first started in this practice of education law, 16 years ago, when I moved from the field I was in into this field, it was one of the first topics I looked at, and at the time the IRS was confused. They had issued different letter rulings privately to people, which were not binding on anybody, and they had conflicting opinions. Since that time, they've clarified their position that if you are entitled to money, as opposed to you can elect to receive money, if you're entitled to money, that they expect that the employer will provide, a public body employer, will provide a W-2, which can present inconveniences that I've been assisting since that was brought to Andy's attention, that can create an inconvenience.
Wait, say this again, Jim.
It's in the letter. I didn't reprint the letter this time, but the IRS has published their most recent guidance, 3 or 4 years old now, saying that a board member who is entitled to receive money should be issued a W-2 by the organization.
So you're saying they're changing from the 2005 opinion that the IRS...
The 2005 opinions had different examiners issuing different conflicting non-binding opinions. They have issued a unified binding guidance. It's not a law, but it's what they expect people to comply with. That says...
But if they don't receive... when you do earn income, it's what did you receive, not what you was entitled to receive. But I think that came out of Congress. Didn't Congress have the same thing?
So Congress has a whole different section of the tax code, actually.
No, there's still IRS codes.
They have a different section in the IRS code, is what I'm saying.
Well, no, it's whether or not you receive or are entitled to. That's my dilemma. That's what I don't understand.
Well, I can't conduct a tax seminar tonight. What I'm talking about is why I'm suggesting we take, I wanted to address why I suggest taking the word shallow. That's what I'm trying to address here.
That's where we're going.
Is because your default NEOLA policy says shall receive, not more than, but it's a limit, and it says shall receive some compensation, shall receive dollar sign. If you eliminate that shall and change it to may elect to receive, all of a sudden, I believe, it's not clear on this specific point, the IRS could come back, which is why I included the last line in here, IRS could come back and say, no, 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 we still want you to push a W-2 out anyway. But I believe you can legitimately, in accordance with current IRS guidance, say nobody's entitled to the money at that point in time. It says you shall elect whether you want the money or not, not you shall receive, which is the current language. And so if you switch shall receive to may elect to receive, I think you can legitimately, if you follow the rest of the yellow language, you notify the superintendent, your timelines, et cetera, say I elect not to receive anything. I am not entitled to receive anything. I don't want a W-2. Which is my understanding where we're trying to get. That we're trying to get to that point that if board members, the whole board, that's your choice, as individuals, want to be able to say, I decline to receive a W-2. I don't want a W-2. That we can get there lawfully by saying, we're not having a shall dollar sign anymore. That we're going to say, I elect. And it takes entirely the concept of being entitled to compensation out of the picture. I mentioned one more statement on here. The reason that I include it unless federal authorities or state direct otherwise is not because that's not generally applicable anyway. I mean, you start at the top of the Constitution and the Supremacy Clause and everything, you know, you say, well, we have to follow the law, right, in any given circumstance. The reason I thought it was useful to include it in this potential revision, suggested revision, was because we're moving away from the default NEOLA policy that you've got here. NEOLA's vetted this. They've already said, we'll stand behind it. We believe that this is okay. NEOLA also tells people, if you ask them, send a W-2 because they've read the same IRS bulletin. That's what they say. So if we're going to move away from that, for understandable reasons, we want to get to the point of saying, you tell us you don't want a W-2, you won't get a W-2, that I've included making explicit in there, we'll comply with the law if the state or the feds tells us what we have to do.
Can I follow up with that?
Yeah, of course.
Only because it's applicable. Anyway, so if down the road, you know, I intend to opt out of, you know.
You sign this and say, I don't want a W-2 in any compensation.
So 3 years from now, mm-hmm. and someone comes in, like you indicated, and said, hey, we don't think that's following the law. What would that mean for me as an individual that I am now have filed taxes? It could be deemed fraudulent, right, or not?
I don't know.
I would have filed without a W-2.
I was going to say, I don't think they'd be able to tag you for fraud at that point in time because you had no reason to think that they were entitled, that you would had to follow through with that.
Could I be in any issue with that?
I never want to promise the feds won't come after anybody.
But the way it's written, you're anticipating that isn't going to be, but we understand things change.
So what I'm trying to anticipate is... not that I would read a new bulletin and tell you, hey, all of a sudden, surprise, gotcha, you got to do a W-2 now. But if the IRS issues a new letter, instead of the one that's currently out there that says, send W-2s if they're entitled to money, which is what it currently says, and they send a new one that says, we don't care if they're entitled to money, I want everybody who's an elected board member to get a W-2 from the feds, and that comes out. I would mail that to you and say, hey, bulletin alert, we need to have a board meeting to talk about this because the feds are saying everybody has to have a W-2. Okay. They haven't done that. That's not current status. But that's what I was getting at with that last line
that
in there,
sense.
is if they direct that, we got to come back to you and say, hey, we need to be compliant. So, because that's not, I mean, I shouldn't speak for anybody else. I don't think taking on the feds on something like that is probably the best use of your resources and time here in terms of what you do. If you want to fight with them. I mean, if you want to, you can have that fight with them. Well, there's days I want to have those fights too. So, but I don't want to steer my clients into them because they're expensive and take a lot of energy. So that's the thought behind that. The pink, the deletion on the shall, was to say, nobody's entitled to money anymore, therefore, you can do without a W-2, which I think was the object we were trying to get to, and then the rest is just the structure to try to make that evident.
I know you put a lot of work into this, and thank you. I am much appreciated.
Try to be responsive.
Can I ask a question that's not necessarily tethered to this?
I'll certainly try my best to answer, as long as it's not details of the tax code.
It's not details of the tax code. So at a couple of reinstatement hearings, there was a question that kept coming up. If a student has been expelled for 180 days and they come in front of a reinstatement hearing for some sort of reason, can the board say, no, we're not reinstating you, you're going to continue being expelled?
Yes.
Okay, and then my next question is, if
Section 1311, I actually know the citation for that.
Okay, so my next question is, if a student has a long-term suspension, similar situation, they come back to their reinstatement hearing, the reinstatement committee says, we don't think that they have done what we have requested them to do, can we continue that long-term suspension to, like, possibly meet the 180 days expulsion? Is that also permissible?
That's a great question, and I'll give you a clear answer, but I want to explain a little bit of the context for it because it's evolved a little bit. The school code was last revised in this area in 2017, and before then, there were four different terms of expulsion and suspension, and they were sometimes inconsistent and they overlapped, and so the legislature tried to clean it up. So they drew a bright line and said at 60 days plus, you can call it anything you want, suspension, long-term suspension, temporary suspension, whatever you want to call it, but at 60 days plus, it counts as an expulsion in Michigan today. So you can suspend somebody, and if it's 60 days plus zero or plus one or plus whatever, anything over, it will count as an expulsion in Michigan. The significance of that is that if you do a suspension, and this is the part that's been litigated, so I'm knowledge of case law and knowledge of the statute, which is section 1311 in the school code, the revised school code. Case law litigation on suspension says on you do a 30-day suspension. On day 31, so N plus 1 days, you come back, the end. Like, that's what it is. You come back when you've served your suspension. If you are expelled under Michigan law, and again, it's at 1311, I think it's section D that talks about this. Under Michigan law, if you are expelled, you do not have a right to come back. You have a right to petition. You have a right to come to that committee. You have a right to say, I would like to petition for readmission. And so when you're over that threshold, that's when the board can all of a sudden say you're going to impose conditions. You're going to say, have you gone to counseling? Have you proved that you've done your homework, et cetera, because you have a right to apply to come back. And you go through that committee, which is defined in section F in that section, with the board members and the principal and the community, et cetera, et cetera. You have the right to come before them and ask for permission. But that committee is allowed to say no. They're allowed to say not yet. They're allowed to say, what have you done to show that you've earned it? You know, please do more. All of those things. So that's the significance of that 60-day line there. If you cross into expulsion, you have a right to petition for readmission. If you are under that, you have a right to come back the day after your suspension is up.
Yep.
So how many
times? It's a good question.
So you would need to repetition after the initial decline. How many times can you repetition? I thought you told me one time there's one bite at the apple, and that's I'm like, no, I think Jeremy said that, and so I might have misspoke in context.
So it could be, you could be allowed if the committee says we're giving you another window at that point in time. So the statute sets a threshold. You may not petition before this date. So you have 180 days is kind of the default for the big ones. You can't petition. You're not allowed to ask to come back before the 180 days. That shifts in different circumstances. There's 90 day and 60 day. And then if you get in grades 5 and below, so the younger kids, even for a mandatory category, a kid, I don't mean to get way in the weeds, but because there's exemptions to exemptions. So a mandatory category, like a big knife, but the exemption to that is guns don't count. Guns are entirely separate anyway. So let's talk about a knife. So a first grader brings a big knife and says, I'm bringing it to stab somebody. They bring it for an illegal purpose, and it's definitely in the statutory category. Because of their age, they're allowed, you can expel them for as long as you want. You can say, you're expelled for 180 days. In the statute, I think this is in J, they are allowed to petition for readmission after only 10 days because of their age. They get an earlier a window that they can come before the committee and say, I would like to file that petition now. If If you file a petition for readmission before the statutory threshold is met for that, you just ignore it. It just goes in the circular file. It doesn't count at that point in time. So the answer to that question is you get one in the statute. Like you're allowed, it'll say you can petition at X date, whatever that date is. You get to petition there. If the committee says, which they're allowed to do, we're not saying yes today, but we're not saying no forever. Come see us in 30 days after you've gone to more counseling and done some homework or something like that. You could come back for another one at that point
so
in time.
You could do 2, 3, 400.
If the committee kept giving you another chance.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the question.
You're welcome.
All right, so on your board policy, look for it cleaned up right there. It'll be presented to you at the end of the month as a first reading, and then in May at second meeting. Also, we'll be presenting to you next week or so. It'll have what the template will look like. So we're going to come in already done with an election form for you. And so you're going to pick which one you want, and we'll have it all on there, sign it, submit it, and that'll happen annually. So the last item I have for tonight is the RFPs for fleet management, and that is in your packet there. So the RFPs were released on February the 26th. Announcement of RFP was placed in the Monroe News on February 29th, March 3rd, Monroe Public Schools website. On GovWin website, and that's a website where industry they have a login to go in there, and they can always see all the RFPs that are coming in, and it's a national site. And that's a site that we've put on before. And then I reached out to Vector Fleet Management. They were one of the two companies that responded 3 years ago, along with First Vehicle, for fleet management. On March the 5th, we held a mandatory meeting. We scheduled a second one because of changeover in people. We had some issues, technical issues, getting onto the GovWin site, so we held a second meeting on March 11th. So anyone that missed it could have a second opportunity to be there. Bid opening was on March 27th at 2 p.m. First Vehicle, who is our current provider, provided a proposal for both full services and staffing only. Metz provided a staffing only proposal. First Student reached out and had missed the first mandatory meeting, pre-bid meeting, and then also missed that second one. They wanted to place a bid on it, but I let them know that because they missed those two mandatory opportunities for pre-bid, that they would not be accepted. Vector Fleet, when talking with them, declined to quote. When you read in there when I said provided a staffing only proposal. So we asked for two formats. One was the traditional format we've seen in the past, which is total services. And then we also asked for one that would be just take the parts out, because the parts is a variable that I think also has a factor on us for when we try to make our fleet younger. Then if your fleet's younger, you're not going to spend as much money on parts. So I wanted to eliminate that because and that is a variable, because that's a controllable item that we can help to control and use as a way to maybe get a younger fleet in the system. So I wanted to have us take a look at it. And so the first thing I want you to do is if you flip back in to this page right here, it's about third from the back roughly, and that's the First Vehicle. It is their 3-year quote for total services. And so their 3-year rate, and you can see its labor cost is $402,000 for a year. That is with 3 mechanics and the secretary, and along with a shop manager. Parts, this is why I wanted to make sure we kind of pull that out and take a look at it. Parts is at $125,000 for year one. Overhead expenses is $39,000. I'm going to give you a description of what that looks like. Go back one page, sir. Yep.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. And then they broke down administrative costs and management costs. So their total cost is $630,000, or their daily per diem rate, which is 260 days, is $2,400 a day for everything that they do. And then you can see how that goes forward over the next 3 years. I asked Karen to provide us what we would see in a normal overhead expense. So if you flip back a couple pages, you're going to see one like this right here. Towards the back, Larry, to your right. Yep. No problem. So right there. So when you get the idea, okay, well, what's overhead cost? Why is there, what's $40,000 chewing up a year? That's their fleet management system. That's office computers. Remember, they have everything out there. All we provide them is the room. We provide the heat. We provide some, you know, the bolt the equipment that's bolted down, but most of the other equipment is all first vehicle. So diagnostic laptop programs, updates, all that kind of stuff, shop supplies, nuts and bolts. So they're not, so when they look at parts, they're not billing us for that because it's part of their overhead costs. So the service truck, and you can, so you can kind of get a feel for that's what's inside of that. An interesting point too is that when overtime happens, we don't get billed separately for overtime. Overtime is already a part of their over, all their costs. So if, for example, if we have a really bad month or we just came off of bus inspections and they had 20 hours of overtime, we're not getting billed for that. That's part of their $2,400 a day per diem rate. And so then I also asked for a breakdown of kind of like just parts. So give us some of our typical parts and then what kind of monies are we spending on those typical parts so we'd have an idea of that. So one option we have is to keep first vehicle total system, okay? Where the, and you saw what that number shaked out to be, which was $630,000 for the first year and then moves up. Your other option, and now if you go back to the very front page, $630,000, it's, go back one page, ma'am. Yep, okay. So what they, I'll be able to help you out on that in a second right here. So if you go back to the very first page of our document I provide you, if you want to now look at taking parts out, okay? Now we look, take parts out, we look at first vehicle, and this is their labor, overhead costs, management fees, so forth, okay? So first vehicle is $486,000 for year one. Metz is $380,692, so about near $106,000 difference.
So that's
okay.
Apples to apples.
It's apples to pineapples, okay? And here's where the pineapples sit.
Yeah, that's
all right. Yep, here's where the pineapples sit. Metz is labor only.
Right.
They're not providing a single shop tool. They're not providing a single desk, single computer, single diagnostic tool. Nothing. They're supplying their people. When overtime happens, you get billed. Okay, so they're just saying we're going to supply you the people. Everything else is on Monroe Public Schools.
When you say there's no overtime,
no. So like for on the $486,000 for first vehicle,
right.
If they end up with 20, 30, 40, 50 hours on the year, right. It's already that number doesn't change. Go over to Metz,
right.
That number is going up.
So it's
this is on 40-hour work weeks.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And this does not include our diagnostic software,
no.
Diagnostic computers for these vehicles, correct?
Any of that overhead expenses?
$40,000.
So as a bare minimum, you're heading right where I went. Is that so as a bare minimum, Monroe Public School is going to be on the hook for at least $40,000. It could be even more because there's no up. What's the startup cost? Because we're going to have to buy.
You have to buy the Snap-on scanner, everything.
So everything that's in that building belongs to the first vehicle.
Not everything.
But
okay.
Most of the
technical tools,
okay.
That leaves.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the hoist is ours.
The air compressor.
We've
got a tire.
Yeah. We've got a tire machine.
Tire machine now.
So
yeah.
Can I just do a quick, I am not versed in this, and
yep.
I'm totally needing 30 seconds here. So Metz and First Vehicle, do they both provide staffing right now?
So Metz right now for Monroe Public Schools, takes care of the bus drivers.
And that has nothing to do
nothing
with
to do with it. This is
okay.
The bus management. This is the fixing of buses, fixing of our trucks.
And who currently provides the staffing for that?
First vehicle.
Okay, so this would be something new for Metz.
Correct.
Okay, the second question would be, what is the current contract that we have with First Vehicle? This says 486.
Yeah, so the current contract that we, that's what I was saying, the current contract we have now with First Vehicle, and I'd have to get you that number. It's probably right around that $600,000-ish.
So we're not moving very far.
No. Well, so the choice we have is to keep First Vehicle just the way they are, which they take care of everything. So, for example, they're budgeting $125,000 for parts. So if we have a year where, guess what, a couple of transmissions go and something else, well, they're going to probably go over that $125,000 because, you know, they look at the age of our fleet. Now, if they have a year where, you know, not a lot of bad things happen, okay, so then they're underneath that number. So they take, first vehicle has the risk in the parts, okay?
One thing I asked for and I still haven't received is that I wanted their workflow and all the work sheets. Boy, that would be helpful to me. Now, the last time I talked to Bill out there, he says, I've only replaced one transmission.
Yep.
In my life when I was here. So I don't, yeah. I don't know.
Well, so we gave you all the
I don't remember the worksheets that they
had. Yeah, that I mean, it was like 150 pages long.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I don't get my email, so that could be it.
Okay.
It was a lot of... I glossed over.
Okay,
I honestly speaking, I totally glossed over.
It was a lot, because it also had in there... when we take care of SMC buses and others too, what comes back to Monroe Public Schools, and that we're not reimbursements and not charged. Yeah.
I have the current year.
Yeah.
Contract. Great. Hold it up. It's $611,067.76.
Thank you. Yep.
The most recent 23-24 rate.
Yep.
$611,067.76.
Yeah.
Do we currently do a contract with them each year, or do we do multiple year contracts?
No, we typically do a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
That's standard.
Yep.
So when they have the contract, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, does Metz have experience running maintenance?
So they have ran some shops right there. Okay. What gets nervous is that, one, do our current people get hired on, yeah. Not hired on? Honestly, you guys, transportation right now as a whole is working beautifully,
yeah.
and it's a nervous area to play in. And I'm getting back to the why I had them quote it and taking out the parts, so we could take a look at that, because if we can construct a contract, for example, with First Vehicle, that year one, we leave it the way it currently is. But then as we bring forth, and we're going to be bringing a plan forward to you on how to look at making our fleet younger and where we can actually find savings in our fleet. And once we start to make that shift, then we'll want to have the opportunity to be able to say, we want to have the parts directly billed to us. We're going to still get the reduced cost, because that's where we're going to be able to pay for some of our buses. And then that way we don't have to worry about, okay, did we reduce the fleet? Because having three mechanics out there, because it's not only us, the ISD is also out there in all of our vehicles, that's how they could really use a fourth. Right now they're living with three. And so when you really look at the number of vehicles that they manage, so it's back to, okay, well, what can we really get control of? It's the parts, and that we have a look-see. So one of the things that we're doing, and that's why it'll either be before you guys in 2 weeks, or it'll be 1st of May, is we are rewriting the contract. Okay, Jeremy and I have talked about that, because we really felt like after this last year that contract needs to be rewritten and looked at closely so that it can be there. But I know that we're running short of time, and I want to give us ample time. So what I would ask is go ahead.
Side note on that, and this was part of a previous conversation that we had about the organization. It is a huge organization that has a spider web of reach in pretty much the entire transportation in the state of Michigan at minimum.
Oh, if First Vehicle? Oh, they're across the country.
First Vehicle is Rider Transportation.
They pretty much have.
They're also called TransDev. I mean, it's
huge.
Monopoly. Well, but that's why when you look at the cost for parts, that's what you can see. I did reach out.
That's why you can get that.
Yeah.
That's why they can do that.
Yep. But that's where we can.
Flexibility, because the equipment's already here. We don't have to buy the equipment. They can get better parts. They can get cheaper parts, and they can use their system.
I don't know, because the last time we bid this out, one of the contractors says, why don't you get your parts through the state purchasing? And I says, can we do that? He says, yeah. Yeah, schools could do that, now Mets and they can, but if we did arts, we could buy through the state.
Right, but that's where.
That's already been joined up.
But that's.
Private-public partnerships have already been developed.
And we don't pay taxes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty.
But as we walk this out, we want to make a, we want to write a contract that allows for some flexibility so that we can start to shift. Because we've got 10, 12 buses that are in that 15 to 20-year range. And those are, that's where you're, we spend money. And so down the road, I'm not going to take time tonight, but we'll show you different ways that we can look at our fleet and how to, and where we can start to save and have a strong fleet there. So look for more information from us on this, but I wanted to provide us time to take a break before we start that. So go ahead, Larry.
We pay $611,000 now in the contract for year one calls for $486,000. Is that?
No, 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 no. You're looking at it as just labor with no parts.
Oh, that's just labor.
Yep.
Right, now you're going to throw some parts in there.
Obviously, we need page.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so six of them compared to 630, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
And I can tell you, in the automotive field and the truck field, prices have gone up at least that much.
Cramp.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay, I'm done.
All right, can I get a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Are we going to talk about this contract?
Yeah, we're going to talk more on this. We're out of time tonight.
Okay.
There's more to come.
Good.
In another work session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More to come.
This is just a kick to the, go ahead.
Okay.
Show of hands. This meeting is adjourned and we'll start our board meeting at 7:00.